Ah, spring. Nothing like the world progressing towards summer to inspire your own progress. That's what life's all about. In your career, relationships, and your finances. Let's talk about that last one. With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa credit card, it's easy to start building credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments with no annual fees or interest. So your weekly grocery run can feel even more productive, and that morning coffee can taste like a little victory. And if your credit scores grow, so could your opportunities to get lower rates on loans, like for a new ride or finally having a home to call your own. Sounds like progress, right? With Chime Secured Credit Card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime. Feels like progress. The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Code STAPLE20.
Gotta get your brain right if you're trying to make $1 million. If you ain't gonna do it for yourself, then do it for your mama. Only stay surrounded by them people if you know they solid. Elevate your hustle up today to double up your profit. Trying to learn some game, Xavier y'all gonna talk about it. No Deanna, speak that shit that everybody vouching. Ain't no more excuses valid. Get up off the couch and get up in your bag. To your bank account, need an accountant.
Yo, 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 welcome back to the greatest show on earth, the Millionaire Mindsets Podcast. I am your host, Xavier, sitting here with the wonderful D. D, what's up?
What's up? How you doing today? Thank you for the introduction.
Yeah, of course. He sounds so professional. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I am professional.
Right, you are professional. My bad. That's my fault. Yeah, you know, we ain't been in the studio in like a week, so you got to keep it fresh. I feel good being back today. So today, we got a super, super, super dope episode, so I would definitely advise y'all to share this one. To everybody you know, because it's about to be jam-packed with value. But before we start, I would like to advise all the listeners and all the watchers to please subscribe, like, rate, leave a comment, leave a review, leave that five-star rating, all those things. We're trying to get those subscribers up, everything I mentioned, we're trying to get that up. So if you can do all those things, we greatly appreciate it. So getting right into the show, we got a special guest. And first, I want to say shout-out to my bro, Jay Monopoly. He introduced me to this man about two, three months ago. And then he said, we got to get this done. I'm like, he told me about him. I'm like, yeah, we got to make this happen. So we excited to have you here on the show. His name is Kevin Jennings. So welcome to the show, bro.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Definitely, man.
And getting right into it. So for the people who may not be familiar with you, this may be their first time seeing you or hearing of you. Do you mind just giving some background on yourself, let our listeners know who you are?
Yeah, cool. So I'm a serial entrepreneur from Miami, Florida. I got into government contracting about 15 years ago. That's kind of the lane that I've been rocking with ever since then. Prior to that, just like most people, I was in real estate. So I was in real estate as soon as I got out of college, really. So from 24, I jumped out and just went straight into real estate, 23, 24 years old. Made a bunch of money, then lost everything during the recession in 08. Got introduced to government contracting and really just been running up a bag doing that. Then just this past year, really, like January, February, I really got into the coaching space, kind of pushed by a bunch of other people, like, yo, you should do this, you should really start helping. So I'm like, all right, cool, I'll hear y'all out. So I put a course together, and then, so really the past 6 months, just been helping other people learn about government contracting. And then not even so much just the government contracting, but then also just helping people set themselves up as business people. Because that's one of the major things about, you know, doing business with the government is you got to have a real business. You can't have a fake, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nowadays, you got so many people that have play businesses. So that's what I've been doing a lot of, is just helping people grow their business and then show them how to get money with the government.
I want to take it back for a second, because we was just out and we was talking about how I was saying I think the recession is coming and some things I was doing to prepare myself. But you was telling me about the last one that you experienced. So do you mind just like sharing some of those things that you went through during the last recession and like what you learned from it? Because you was telling me like all the properties and stuff you had.
I was young and I ran up a bag with real estate because I realized like how to use it, and I just went crazy. And so I had a portfolio of like $15 million worth of properties, you know, at the age of 25, 26. And then the recession came in 08 and I lost everything. And like I was telling you, like jokingly, I never had to file bankruptcy, but it's only because all the banks that I owed money to and had mortgages with, they ended up going out of business. So I ended up just not owing
nobody.
But essentially, like, I went bankrupt in 2008, and that's when I got introduced to government contracting. But it was crazy. Like, I had a good run. I was living at a young age, but nobody told me about a recession. So I always told myself, man, if it happened again, I'm going to be ready this time. I ain't going to be doing crazy stuff. Because like I was telling you, if I knew then what I know now, like, I could have probably worked out deals and still had some of those assets.
Yeah.
And I could be really, really, really well off right now because they were discounting properties down to like 10, 20 cents on a dollar back then. Mm-hmm. I had apartment buildings. I had apartment buildings in Miami. I had apartments in Atlanta. Like, I had houses all over Atlanta, houses all over Miami. It was like I had houses in North Carolina. So, like, I had houses and buildings everywhere. But I didn't know how to negotiate with the banks. I didn't know anything like that. So I just let stuff go. Damn. Like, now knowing how to do all those different things, that's why I'm like, this time around, they ain't finna get, like, I know too much.
So hold up a second, because we got to talk on this, because you just kind of slid that in there. But you said you had a $25 million portfolio.
15.
At 25 years old.
Yeah, 25, 26.
How in the world did you do that at such a young age?
Real estate was easy back then, especially in Miami.
They was giving out the loans, huh?
They was giving out. It was just, you didn't have to do that.
So you was acquiring properties?
I was just acquiring properties like crazy. And then, so I have a construction background.
Okay.
You know, so with my construction background, I started like a little investment company with me and like four of my other homeboys. And so we all had individual skills at different trades. So like, I was good with like drywall. We had another guy who was really good with tile. We had one guy who was an electrician. Another guy was a plumber.
Y'all had the whole team.
So we had a whole little team. And what we were doing was we were buying HUD properties. Because back then, kind of like how people talk about in Detroit, how like they sell properties for a dollar or for $100. Mm-hmm. Well, back then they were doing that for properties all over the U.S. Like HUD had a bunch of houses and they were selling them for really, really cheap. So you could buy properties for literally nothing. Mm-hmm. And you just have to go in and do everything to them. But you were getting the properties for literally $100, $200. And so that's how we did it. We just built up. And then I started getting apartment buildings. And then once I started getting, so I started with single family, then went to like 2 to 4 unit multifamily, and then just got into apartment buildings and commercial stuff, and then just started branching out from there. Mm-hmm. So it just,
amazing.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then I started doing new construction. And that's more so what I do like a lot now with my real estate stuff, is I do a lot of new construction or like really massive renovations, not like cosmetic stuff. And it comes from that. Mm-hmm. So after I got really good with doing rehabs, then I was like, all right, now the next step is to start doing new construction. And I had a homeboy that was building. So we started building in Tallahassee, where I went to FAMU, like I was saying, in Tallahassee. So we started building back in Tallahassee, and then I just building. So it just literally, it was like from 23, 24 to like 27. For me, like, those years were crazy. I was just going crazy. I was going crazy with real estate.
Damn.
Because it was easy. Like, right. You literally didn't have to do anything back then. If you had a little bit of money and they were doing stated loans, you know what I'm saying? That's it. They were doing stated loans, bank statement loans. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we were making money, so we had the bank statements to prove it all.
Yeah.
So wow. It was crazy.
So then the recession happened.
And that was it.
That was
it. It was all gone.
Real
that's crazy.
Yeah, but it was gone so fast.
Damn.
I didn't know what to do.
Hey, but that led you into government contracting. So how did that happen? How did that transition happen?
Yeah, so my dad was in the government contracting. He was a vet. He was in the Navy.
Okay.
He was an aircraft mechanic in the Navy. And so he got introduced into government contracting in the early 80s when he had got out of the military. He was working for Eastern Airlines.
Okay.
And he would do aircraft maintenance repair like on the side for people who had little small planes in Miami. People used to have these little charter jets. They would go to the Bahamas or they would go to Cuba and do stuff like that. So he would work on their planes. And then he ended up working on some military aircraft for somebody. And then that's how he got introduced to it. So then when I was going through all my stuff with real estate, he was like, yo, you need to, you know, what you going to do? So then he kind of peeped me to it. And so I was like, all right, cool. Because I remember always seeing him do it.
Mm.
So then I started learning more about it. And then that's how I started back. So I started doing small commodities purchases, selling rubber gloves, hand sanitizer, paper towels, printer paper, printer ink. And I was supplying local places. I was supplying Homestead Air Force Base, the Coast Guard, TSA at Fort Lauderdale Airport, Miami Airport, and I was just selling them goods. And then that's how I was able to build myself back up and then progressively started doing construction projects.
So how long from like when everything went south for real estate did it take for you to kind of bounce back business-wise and mentally from that huge loss and get into government contracting?
Yeah, mentally was probably like the worst.
Right.
Because it was just so weird, like being that age and going through all of that. Like I never really had nobody I could talk to. It was like I couldn't even really talk to my parents because they had never done what I had did at the time. You know what I'm saying? And then they had never lost it like I lost. So it was kind of like mentally I was in a bad place. So it took me like a year, honestly, year and a half for me to
just
get
mentally,
just mentally to get myself in a better position to even be able to deal with life.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, because I had nobody to lean to. I had nobody to talk to. I couldn't do anything.
Yes.
I had moved to Charlotte, and that's when I started buying a lot up in North Carolina. I moved to Charlotte just to get out of Miami to try to get my head right. And I was up there for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to figure it all out. And then, so after that year, I came back to Miami, and that's when I started doing the government contracting. And then from the time that I started, it was a good, honestly, it was a good 2 years of just grinding before I really started seeing success. So I really didn't start doing halfway decent with government contracting until like 2011.
Okay.
Mm. I want to take it back to like just the basics for somebody that's listening or watching, and they probably don't even know what like a government contractor is. So do you mind just breaking that down just for the person out there that may not even know like what they, like, what the hell are they talking about?
Yeah, so the way I tell people is like this. The United States government is the largest consumer of goods and services in the world, right? So the U.S. government buys everything from, like I said, from paper towels, toilet paper, all the way up to IT security services, all the way up to the planes, the space shuttle, like everything is bought. The United States doesn't truly manufacture anything. And not just the government, but just as a country in general,
right.
We don't make anything. Everything that we use is bought in some way. So basically what a government contractor does is you supply the government, whether it be federal, state, or local, with everything that they need to operate as a government. So my companies operate at the federal level, and so we supply goods and services to the federal government. Then I also have another company where we operate at the state and local level. But we do services for local states and then also like the little cities and towns around. Because every form of government needs help with something.
Right.
Yeah. So like me specifically, I'm based in construction. So a lot that I do is around the construction field now. So I have a vertical construction company and a horizontal and a underground construction company.
And what do you mean by that when you say vertical?
So my vertical is your traditional buildings. And so we do stuff for like the VA hospital, the Air Force, Coast Guard, and we renovate buildings. We do stuff for the FAA as well. We do aircraft control towers for the FAA and some office spaces for the FAA. And then my underground construction company, I deal in water and sewer infrastructure. So basically I rehabilitate water and sewer lines for cities and states. Yeah. So like, not to get ahead of it, but basically that's what makes the business recession proof for me. And that's why I'm able really to talk to people about it and get them to understand it. Like we're talking about the recession, it truly is recession proof. So for me and my underground construction company, one of the best years that I had was the pandemic. And people say, why? And it's like, because, so you have these pipes that go underneath the streets and that run underneath houses and the buildings and everything. And they either supply water or they take the sewage away from homes, right?
Right.
So these pipes were designed for people to not be at home all day. They're made for you to be at work from 8 o'clock in the morning to 6 or 7 o'clock at night. That's how they do their design calculations. So during the pandemic, everyone was home all day long. So they're using more water. So that means the city has to figure out a way to pump more water to
doing
you.
More number twos.
They're doing more number twos. They're taking more showers. They're brushing their teeth more. And so my business went through the roof. But then on the flip side to that, as government contractors, the government uses us more than they use their own employees. So the pandemic as an example. When the pandemic hit and everything was locked down, they didn't want to have their employees coming to work because the last thing they want is an employee to say, well, I came to work and I got COVID and then I brought it back to my family. Now this person's sick or this person died. Now I'm suing the city because they made me come to work. So what do? Is they bring in somebody like me. They make me sign waivers to say that I won't sue them. And then they make me go do all the work that they would have had an employee do.
Oh, okay, damn.
So that's really government contracting.
Okay, so something I want to hit on real quick is that you said it was recession proof. Now, are you saying Would you specialize in government contracting as recession proof, or all government?
All government contracts as recession proof.
I thought you were saying what you specialize.
No, I'm just saying I'm giving examples about what I do. Right. But the entire industry is recession proof because the government don't stop. Like they're printing money every day of the week, and they're spending money every day of the
week. Spending like it ain't nothing.
And they need certain things. So the two options they have are to hire more employees and do those things, or outsource to people like me. And they'd rather outsource a lot of their stuff because it costs them more to have an employee than it does to have a contractor. Just do the work. So like the example we were talking about earlier is if they have an employee that they're going to pay $100,000 a year on a salary to do a job, but then they also have to pay all the taxes that are associated with that person. They have retirement, 401k, they have health insurance benefits that they have to pay. Those are what we call a burden. So there's a burden rate on every employee. So what they do by having a contractor come in is it takes away that risk of burden.
Right.
So now they have a fixed cost. So they know that, okay, this person is going to do this job and it's going to be X. And that number won't change. And so that's what makes it recession proof.
Okay. It's
because they'd rather use us.
One more question.
Go ahead.
So the government hires you and they essentially take away a lot of the risk for themselves.
Correct.
But they essentially pass it over to you.
Correct.
So now what does that look like for you as a business? Do you think the risk... Well, the award really outweighs the risk for you to take on that amount of risk to do the job?
Yeah, if you're a good business person. Like, that's where it comes down to, like I was saying, with me, when I talk to people, it's like, now you got to get your business together because you got to be a good business person. So you have to know how to analyze and mitigate that risk on your side. So you have to look at what they're asking you to do and decide, okay, if they would have paid, say, somebody on a salary $100,000, but now I'm doing it, these are the risk factors that are associated with it. So for me to do it, I got to charge you $200,000, $250,000, $300,000. And then you as a contractor got to determine what your rate is going to be and what the risk is to you and what you're willing to take on. Like, I don't take on every job. Like, there's plenty of jobs that I just be like, no, I don't want to do that. I pass on a lot of stuff. I pick and choose what I do. And I do the same thing with, like, people that I talk to. I'm like, no, you should probably pass on that, wait around, do this. Because the risk is there. And you got to think that they want you to do it because they don't want to do it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because it's not everything that they want done. It's not like they can't do it themselves. It's a reason why they don't want to do it. So you just have to determine if it makes enough financial sense for you to do it. Nine times out of ten, it does.
Yeah, like that's that. Crazy. And like you said, the government has so much money. I think the average listener, if you don't have any military experience or like worked in government contractor, it's probably hard for you to comprehend like how much money they just have to really waste. I remember when I was active duty, like, you know, Deanna, you know, like once a quarter or yearly, your squadron would get a budget on like, we got this much money that we got to spend on supplies or whatever. And it would be stupid shit. It would be like office supplies. So we would go down and spend $25,000 on pens, paper, and never use it. It's just like, we got to spend this money. You use it, lose it. Yep. You know. So, like, the government, they have so much money that they have to spend and do certain things. So, if you're in the right position, you got the right business setup, structure, and all that, you could be the one reaping those rewards, for real.
Yeah, and that's honestly what I be trying to tell people. Like, they got the money. They have to spend it. The problem is that a lot of times they don't give people the knowledge of how to gain access to it. And right. that's the big problem. But best believe the big companies, the Fortune 500s, the five families, like all the people that truly run this country and this world, they know it.
No, for sure.
And they piece of it. They just don't tell you that it's possible. But trust me, they know. No. Like all them big companies, like I was doing a presentation like 2 weeks ago, and I was talking to some people and I was showing them just like a quick spreadsheet of all the different companies and how much money they make. And there was two companies on there that really blew people's mind when I showed them the list. So one was Dell. Dell did like $15 billion last year. And I'm like, when's the last time
you seen a Dell
computer?
Right.
It's been a minute, right? You remember back in the day, like they would sit up to the house. Yeah. Like, when's the last time you seen a Dell computer? But Dell's still making billions of dollars every year. They don't need to show you that they're doing it. And the other big one that we looked at was Oshkosh.
Oshkosh
did like $5 billion last year. And I'm like, but that's another thing. Like, these are companies that in your mind, you've written them off.
You definitely write them off.
But they're not written off. They're just getting government money and they don't need us as consumers anymore.
Damn, now it makes sense. In the military,
see what that?
It just hit from me. See, in the military, all you see is deals.
Right.
All you see is Dells. Right. But when's the last time you went to somebody's house and you seen a Dell? You ain't seen it. Well, we got You got an Apple. Right? Damn, but does that mean that Dell is out of business? Nah, Dell's still making a lot of money.
They just specialize.
Because they realize, and so, like we all know in business, right? So there's business to consumer, business to business, and business to government.
Right.
In business, we get hung up on doing B2C. We get hung up on business to consumer. We get hung up on, let me touch this person. Let me, put this ad up on Facebook, Instagram, and get somebody to buy my product. So we focus so much on consumers that we miss business to business and business to government. Mm-hmm. Whereas large corporations, they do it the complete opposite. They focus on business to government and business to business. And then if they happen to get consumer sales as a byproduct, they're cool with it. But the main course of their business is not consumer sales. Whereas in business, we always focus on consumer sales. So that's why I try to get people to understand is not flip it, change the narrative, do what they're doing. Like Dell is a prime example. When Dell had a surplus or when they weren't getting as much government work, then they went out and they started picking up consumer stuff. But they didn't need consumer growth. They based their growth on the government and other businesses. Because Dell is big if you have a business, like Dell will come in and outfit your entire business with computers, servers, all those types of things. They're big on that. They don't really care about the consumer dollar anymore. They care about those other two.
That's crazy. That makes so much sense now because every computer I had while I was in the military was a Dell computer.
That was crazy. It's like, I laugh because like anytime I talk to people and do something like this, usually it takes like 5-10 minutes for somebody and then you just see the light bulb go and they'd be like, bro, that's crazy. And I'd be like, I told you it's not that hard. Because I talk to people and they'll be like, man, I don't know. And I promise you it's like 5-10 minutes in, they'd be like, and then you just see the light and I'd be like, see, I told you. And that's exactly what happened because you're like, hold on, man. Yeah, you're right. That's how it happens every time, yo.
All our computers was Dell.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. So everything sounded good. Now, let's say we got somebody listening. They want to get into it. They like what you're saying. Mm. But you don't say you got these big corporations in there like Dell, like you, taking these government contracts. So what would you tell someone who's listening who doesn't have this big company but wants to get in and get contracts?
It's a lane for it because 20% of every dollar that the government generates has to go to small and minority classified businesses of some sort, right? So they make it a point to give money to small businesses, to give money to minority businesses. The terminology that we use in the federal government now is social and economically disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. And then the state and local, they still do look at different things like, Black, Latino, things like that. But on the federal government side, it's basically based on you as a social status. How much money do you make based on where you live, based on the census tract? And they have a goal to help you as a business get to the next level. So they want to take you from being a small business to being a medium and large business. Problem is they can't make you do it. But they have the programs and they have the things in place for you to do it. Mm-hmm. You just have to learn where to go for those things and stuff like that.
And don't the government, as far as like their how they define things, don't they define you as a small business up to like what, 50 million or something like that?
So it depends on your NICE code. But typically I tell people 28 million and 500 employees. So as long as you make less than $28 million for 3 consecutive years and have less than 500 employees, most things you're considered a small business.
That's crazy.
Now there are some NICE codes that go lower to like 7, 10, 14, and there are some that go higher, like mine in construction is 33.6. So until I make more than $33.6 million for 3 consecutive years, I'm still a small business. So I can have a $50 million year, but then the next year have a $10 million year, and I'm still a small business. Being a small business is not what we think of as being small. Like if you hear small business, you're thinking somebody making a couple hundred grand a year. But to them, being a small business is making under $20 or $30 million a year.
Okay. And what's the still having that label as a small business? How does that benefit the business owner?
Yeah, because like I said, they have to give so many dollars
to you.
Okay. And that's their goal. So depending on what agency you're going after, where your location is, different agencies have different goals, and they have different goals across the different classifications. So basically, there's small business, women-owned business, veteran-owned business, hub zone, A-Day, and then there's Alaskan, Native, and Native American, Indian, that are also the classifications. So depending on what you actually fall into and what your work, what your scope of work is, that will determine how much money they set aside for you.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And something I want to throw in there, how you just listed out women-owned, minority-owned, you have to be the majority owner of your business to actually qualify. Just throw that out there. But something I want to ask you, so for someone who's looking to get started, and let's say they might not know exactly where they want to specialize at, how can they figure it out? Is there somewhere they should look to see, okay, this is what the government needs, or should they just already come with a plan in mind?
Nah, you don't necessarily have to come with a plan. You just have to come with the willingness to want to do it. Mm-hmm. So because it's the government, one of the things that I like, and I'm a big proponent of preaching, is there's free information out there because it has to be given to you for free because it's, you know, government dollars. So they have to show you where they're spending their money. They have to show you who's getting that money. All of this is public knowledge. So you can do a lot of research to kind of figure out where you want to fall in that and what you want to go after. And you can use a lot of that free knowledge that's out there for you because they have to give it to you. They have to tell you where they spend their money.
I have
y'all paying attention.
No, for real. You're giving us some game, for real. But before we continue on, we're going to go into our first sponsor really quick.
Hey, you guys. Making money outside of your 9-to-5 or your main income stream sometimes can be tough as you have limited amount of time, energy, and money. But when you invest in starting a car rental business, all of those excuses get thrown right in the trash. The car rental business is one of the easiest ways to start generating 4 to 5 figures a month in passive income. And it just got easier with the help of the Car Rental Blueprint. The Car Rental Blueprint provides information and systems you need to skip the headaches and get straight to the cash flow. You'll learn how to start, scale, and automate your car rental business quickly, even if you have limited time, money, or perfect credit. So click the link in the show notes and use the code MMPOD to get 50% off. And when the cash flow starts filling up your bank account, thank us later. Now let's get back to another amazing episode. And if you want to learn more about the car rental business, go check out episode 142 with special guest Brian.
So if somebody they about to get into government contract, generally speaking, how long does it take to set up your business, your structure, where you can get a contract?
Yeah. So it's the government, right?
Right.
So I like to always start by telling people that it's the government. So like anything that you do with the government, it's going to take some time. So like you asked me earlier, like how long did it take me roughly? Mm-hmm. Honestly, it took me a good 1.5, 2 years before I saw success. I've created a program where I help a lot of people and I try to get it done for them, try to get you registered within 3 to 6 months and try to get you actually out there bidding and winning after 9 months.
What do you mean by registered?
So one of the things that there's a big misnomer that people put out there is they think that if they go set up a LLC or a corporation, like they're a business. But to do business with the federal government is so much more than that, and even on the state and local level. So you have to actually be set up as a legitimate business to do things the right way. So what do we mean by that? So it's having a business structure of your choice, having an EIN, having a DUNS number. Mm-hmm. Then from there, we get you into the SAM, which is the Systems for Awards Management. And we get you a unique identifier, we get you a CAGE code, we set you up with whatever type of classifications you fall under. And then once you're actually registered and they recognize and they validate and verify you, because what they do is they do a verification process. So they're going to look at everything you submitted. They're going to look at your website. They're going to look at your phone number, you know, check that, make sure it checks out. They're going to look at your address and location. They're going to look at all these things to make sure you are a legitimate business. And once the government feels like, okay, you are a legitimate business, then they give you the ability to actually start bidding on work.
And you mentioned bidding too. So for the people that's listening, they might be like, what do you mean you got to bid? Do you mind breaking that down?
Yeah, cool. So the bidding process is, it's real simple. So what they have at different levels of government, they have different tiers. So as you kind of alluded to when you guys used to buy pens, there's the purchase card level. Mm-hmm. So the P card level, usually back in the day, and sometimes now, most people's P cards are maxed out at like $5,000 a day. Some people have $25,000 a day P cards. So on the P cards, which is government purchase cards, they can buy those things. They can buy goods and services up to $5,000 a day. The next level from there is going to be your micro purchases and your small purchases. So those usually require like 1 or 2 people to come in, 3 to give quotes, and then they take the best one out of those quotes. And then when you get into your formal bid process, that's where they're actually putting out requests for proposals, requests for quotations. And then you're getting those from off of SAM, you're seeing what they want to buy, the quantities that they want, the locations they want them sent to, and then you're putting in bids and saying, okay, I can provide this service and this is my number. And that's pretty much how the process works at all different levels.
That makes sense.
Yep.
So can I ask you this? Because I know when I was in, there was like this little running joke was that the government doesn't care about the quality. They just going with whoever's the cheapest. Would you say that's true?
No. So here's how I would answer that. From this side, right, from the contractor side, the government, you are correct in that the government doesn't necessarily care about the quality. But as far as the price, not so much. So what they want from me as a contractor is, for example, if I pick up a contract for painting, they don't want me to be the best painter. They want me to be the best businessman. And then I go hire the best painter. Because the best painter is usually not the best businessman. You see what I'm saying?
That's a fact.
So me as a government contractor, I am a great businessman. And that's what the government buys, is they want that. They want me to be able to do all of the paperwork. They want me to be able to, you know, respond in a timely manner. When they email me, I email them back. If they call me, I can call them back. If they need to make changes, they want to be able to talk to somebody. So that's what they want. And so you're kind of correct in like the quality aspect of it, but as far as the price, not really. They actually pay a premium for the services they get. Now, does it happen sometimes where they just pull people because they need to spend money? Yeah, right. If they got to burn through money, they're just going to grab whoever's standing there to burn through the money. But for the most part, they want to do business with good business people, and they'll pay for that. Because it sounds bad, right? And I'm going to get killed when I say this, so y'all don't come in the comments. But they're government workers. They work for the government because they don't want to work. You feel me?
Now, I know exactly what you mean.
Like, and I can say this because I held a government job for a very short period of time. You guys are in the military, like, you get it. Like, people work for the government because they're like, man, I'm just going to sit here for 20 years. I'm going to get this pension.
Yep.
I'm going to get these days off when they come. Like, I ain't trying to do nothing.
That's
like,
a fact.
And so as a government contractor, I have to be cognizant of that. I have to know that, listen, this person ain't really trying to do all of this. That's why they're calling me. They want me to put all that paperwork together. And then call them and say, hey, I got it all together. Here's everything. Here's the file for the whole job. And all they got to do is look at it, stamp it, and put it in a folder. Like, they don't want to sit there and do all of that. All that extra stuff. Mm-hmm. That's why they work for the government. If they wanted to work hard, they wouldn't work for the government.
That's fact.
I mean, exactly. People kill me when I say it, but I'm like, it's the truth. Like,
no, it's the truth.
How many government work? The little joke or analogy I always tell is like, we all been to the DMV, and you walk in the DMV, and
everybody chilling,
like, and it'd be like five lines, and it's always two old ladies at the end that ain't got nobody in their line. And if you go over to them, you gotta go back over there. And you're like, but you're not doing nothing. Like, I don't do that. I do nah. You gonna go back over there? And then like that's the government.
You ain't lying.
That's a fact.
That's a fact.
And so that's what we do as contractors is I do the work that they necessarily don't want to do.
That make a lot of sense.
Somebody gotta do it.
It has to get done.
Yeah, and they got to pay for it.
Now,
you giving us some game, man. But I want to ask you this, just for the so the people that's listening to this, so they know firsthand, not only is you qualified to get an education, but you actually got the experience, too. So my question is, so how many government contracted companies have you started?
So, four.
Four. Yeah. Do you still own all four?
Nah, I sold one, I'm selling another one, so, and then I shut one down. I merged two of them, so I ended up with three, and then one I sold, and then one I'm selling now, and then I'll keep one.
Okay, so the ones you sold, what was the niche?
The one that I sold previously was based on, like, maintenance and service, so we did a lot of maintenance services for municipalities. That was a lot of state and local and some federal, but service and maintenance work for municipalities. Because, see, the thing is, and this is going into a whole other side of the government contracting game, right? But mergers and acquisitions happen the most in federal procurement.
That's fact.
Government contracting just in general. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that you'll come in, you'll win a bunch of work, and then 9 times out of 10, your competition, like my competitor is the one that bought me. I actually met my competitor at a pre-bid for a job. And I worked in my business, you know, every day as an actual owner-operator. And I went to this pre-bid meeting, and I was talking to the guy, and I don't know why, but they had just bought another company in my area, and the CEO of the company, of like the master holding company, happened to just be there that day. And I met him at this pre-bid, And then we were just talking. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get this job and do this. And then one guy was like, how you know you're going to win? I'm like, I'm telling you, I'm going to beat you. Like, watch. And I beat him. And then like 6 months later, he calls like, yo, we want to buy your company. And I was like, what? And that's how it happens. Like, your competitors buy you because as you start snacking up, snagging up market share, they want that market share. Right. And that's how they grow. So a lot of all the biggest companies, that's what they do. Like, you'll come in as a small business and you'll win a good contract, and then they'll come buy your company because they want your contract. Because, like, I've had awards in my company. I had multiple $100 million contracts. But I can never realize, you know what I'm saying, $200-$400 million worth of work because I don't have the capability to do it. But this, you know, the private equity funds, they have the ability to do it, you know what I'm saying, to do $300-$400 million worth of work. So they'll buy you up quick just because they want your contracts. Mm. So I usually flip my companies every 3 to 5 years. I start them, I build them up, and then I flip them.
And that's intentional?
That's intentional.
Okay.
I could get higher margins if I kept my companies to like the 10, 12 year mark.
Right.
I could get more multiples for them, but I'm not greedy. Mm. So I build them up 3 to 5 years and then I flip them. I sell them. I mean, it's just like real estate. It's just like anything else. You build up a good asset and then you'll find somebody that wants it and you flip it and move on to the next one.
Mm. So, the only reason I'm asking this, cause I know this, you know what the listeners want to hear. So if you mind sharing this, how much did you sell it for? If you can share it. Can you share that?
I can't.
Okay.
But it was 8 figures.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, and the reason I'm asking is because, like I said, this may be people first time hearing you or seeing you. They might be hearing this information. They might go try to find your social media and be like, oh, I don't see. He's not that big on social media. What this guy know? That's why I'm asking. So they like, you got the game and the experience.
It's been a struggle for me with that, honestly. Mm-hmm. But, like I tell people, you got to realize, like, I was a government contractor. I got money off the government for so long. I'm not supposed to be on social media like that, flaunting my wealth.
Right,
exactly. It's the government's money. So for the longest, I lived my life in a box, like I was in a shell. But now, as I'm retiring from that, and I'm retired, I can talk more about it. I can live my life more publicly. So now I'm just getting into the whole social scene, you know, showing my experiences, sharing a little bit about me. Because it sounds bad, but like we talked about, people don't do government contracting because they just don't know it exists. And a lot of times, even us as government contractors, while we're active, it's kind of hard for me to give the game out there while I'm still trying to do it. But now with me being retired from it, I could talk about it a lot more freely. I could show people experiences because if I was doing it very, very actively, I couldn't come in here and like show you an active contract that may have sensitive, you know, information on it if you don't have clearances and all those things like that. But now with me being retired, I can take a contract that I might have had 10 years ago that now I can talk about, I can show, I can do those types of things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
No, it's game, man. And if it, like I said, because I like for people to verify stuff. You can look all this stuff. Kevin got articles and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So y'all can Google them and do your own research. But this is, I love this topic so much just because this is like an alternative route that most people, especially if you don't got no connections to that military world, you know, it's less than 1% of the country that's in the military. Yeah. So, a lot of people ain't got a connection. So if you already don't got a connection to this, you already not going to be hip to this kind of stuff. You're going to be like, what the government contract? I can make money doing this. And if you are hip to it, like we was talking about earlier, you're probably going to be hip from like the actually working for a company from the employee standpoint, not creating your own company. Because like I said, you was the first person that when I was talking to Jay, we had a conversation and you kind of put the light bulb to me because I'm like, dang, I never really looked at it from that standpoint because it's good money and working too, but as you know, being an owner, it's always way more money owning something.
Yeah. So. That's what I try to do is just talk to people and show them the other side. Because like anything, it's two sides to every coin. But if you're only looking at the one side, you think that that's all that it is.
Yeah.
And so even with like your experiences, a lot of times people will be in the service. The minute they come out, then the first thing people say, hey, go get a job for this company, you know, working for them. They're a contractor. And now you're able to take what you're making. I always use number like 100,000 just because it's easy. So like if you were making 100,000 when you were in, then you went to work for this company as a contractor, now you're making 150. What I tell people is understand that that contractor is probably getting $200 or $250 for you. So what you should be doing is setting up your own company and not going back to them and saying, hey, I'm not going to work for you as an employee. I want you to give me a 1099 under my LLC. I'm a service disabled vet. So you're going to get the participation points for hiring me. And I want you to give me that $250 that they're giving you. I might let you make 10%, 20% off me. So still give me 200. You're finna give me a job at 150, give me 200. And then on top of that, I'm gonna take these other four brothers that was in my platoon that wanna do stuff too, and they all gonna work for me too. And I want 225 or 250 off of each one of them. And then instead of paying them $150 that they was going to give them, you're going to give them $175. So now you're making your two and a quarter, and you're making $50,000 off of other people. Mm-hmm. Now you're making $400,000 or $500,000 a year. And you're doing the same job that you was going to do anyway.
Exactly.
Man. And they don't care because all they want is somebody to work because they just want to make a markup on you. Mm-hmm. And it works the same way. If you can mitigate their risk, they'll pay you a little bit more for doing that.
Pay you more.
And they're going to get points because coming back as a vet, now they can go back to whatever agency and say, hey, instead of just hiring these vets, they started their own company and we subcontracted to them. So now the agency is looking at them favorable.
I swear, if we could hit rewind right now and just play that back for all the vets, nah, I would. Because that's like serious game right there. A lot of people have no idea about any of that. But something I do want to ask you, for someone who may be listening, would you say there's particularly like an easier type of contract to go after versus like a harder one? Like somewhere like a good starting point, I would say.
Honestly, it fluctuates. It depends on the times that we're in. Like the industries, the hot industries, they always change. There's a couple ones that are always going to be good, like IT and cybersecurity is always going to be big. Construction is always going to be big. Healthcare is always going to be big. But, I mean, it can be anything. Like I said, I started doing commodities purchases. And a lot of people that I mentor, I start them with commodities because that's the easiest barrier to entry.
Right.
That's the most low cost. Mm-hmm. I literally started with a $2,500 Credit One credit card and then an Office Depot account. And that's how I was selling paper doing that. So you could start at that level, or if you were in the military and you have certain clearances, then you can go after work that requires your clearances. It really depends. It depends on the person. Everything, there's a lane for everything. Mm-hmm. Now it's gotten even crazier because like social media, there's a crazy lane for that. It's just.
But they need social media experts?
Yeah.
Really? That's a thing?
Dead serious.
Oh, I know that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I found a contract. One company now is getting $75,000 a month from the Army to post on their TikTok.
Well, I'm out of here.
I'm about to go. So you got to think, right? As the world changes and the cultures and everything changes, the government can't be left behind. So if people are spending most of their time on social media, on their phones, looking at stuff, and that's how you gain access to people, you got to think. You know, nobody has a house phone anymore.
Right.
Nope. You know, and now you can screen your calls on your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So how can they reach you? You know,
you got to be on social media.
They got to be on social media. So they're getting on social media. They're doing a lot of targeted ads, but they need people to do those things for them. So they need people to do that. I seen stuff for like event spaces. They're renting event spaces to do things. They need audio visual stuff. They need people to record things, kind of like podcast type settings. They need people to record this and then send it out to the masses. They need people to record webinars. Like it's a crazy game right now.
They need everything pretty much.
They need everything.
Yeah.
Because they don't do nothing.
Right.
No, that's the reality of it. That's crazy.
Yeah. I hope this ain't going over people head for real. Especially those that got some kind of military experience or affiliation. Yeah. Because when you can do this right, it's ball game for real.
Yeah, if you can get into the game and you can really, like, if you're a really good business person, I think we were talking about earlier about somebody like that you were saying.
Mm-hmm.
If you get into it and you really are about your business, you can get in and out real fast and make a lot of money and really change your life and change people around you's life. And that's kind of like the point I'm at is, like, trying to change other people around me. Like, nah, do this. Somebody, y'all come get some of this money, like, and just try to help people because you can really... You can run a bag up real fast, and it's a safe bag.
Right.
Like that's the thing about it. It's recession proof. It's safe. It's gonna be there. They're always gonna pay you as long as you do your job. You will get paid.
Don't think about the government. They gonna pay.
They gonna pay.
You ain't gotta worry about no check being late. None of that kind of stuff.
And if they drag you out, like they'll pay late fees. They'll pay interest.
Interest. Yep.
Like all those different things, they'll pay you. You just you gotta do your job.
Have you ever dealt with like government budget cuts impacting like business at all?
Not really.
No.
Because when they cut budgets, they don't. So when they do budget cuts, it doesn't affect contracts that have already been awarded.
Right.
So that's the first thing. So if you already have a contract in place and they do a budget cut, it doesn't affect you because your money was in a prior year's budget. And then also when they do budget cuts, they usually let us know that there's going to be a budgetary cut in a certain area. So you just stay away from that area. And then 9 times out of 10, if they actually do cut, they're going to get the funding back the next year. It's a reason why they cut. They just cut and they reallocate. But if what you're doing and the service you're providing is truly in need, they're going to find a way to put the money back into the system. So they're not going to cut crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, honestly, when they do cuts, if you ever look at the government spending chart, and if anybody wants to find it, I'm very fact-based. So it's www.usaspending.gov. So you can go on USA Spending and you can pull up exactly what they spent in a fiscal year and what categories they spent it in. Normally when they do cuts, they do them on the personnel side. So what they'll do is they'll cut their personnel spending. So that's why when anytime you ever see stuff about the government shutdown, you see the government shut down and the employees can't go to work this week, they cut their employees. They don't cut me. They'll tell the employees, stay home, you're not getting a check this week. And then they hire me to go do the work. And why? Because the employees, they got to pay them every Friday. Me, they got to pay me every 30 days. Have me go do a job for them, they know that they don't have to pay me for 30 days. Right. If they have the employee go do it, they got to figure out how to pay them on Friday. So budget cuts really don't ever affect me.
Okay.
What's it?
Go ahead.
Okay,
I got
another one.
That's cool. I love it.
Okay. Do you need a LLC for each industry? Do you decide to go in when you're getting government contracts?
No.
So you can be all under one LLC?
Yeah, you can be under one. Okay. And a good example that I use of that is companies like Lockheed Martin, mm-hmm. Boeing, Raytheon. These are companies that have one core competency, but they do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically what you would do is you would have your one LLC, you would have your main NICE code, your North American Industry Classification. You would have that main code, which is that's what your business is based on. And then you would have supplementary codes under there, which talk about everything else that you can do.
That makes sense, because I used to know a lot of people that work for Lockheed, and they would do all kinds of different stuff. And I used to be like, what the hell Lockheed do? Like, what's their specialty?
Or even like Boeing. Like when the normal consumer, when they think Boeing, they think airplanes.
Right. Yeah.
But Boeing does so much more than just airplanes. Like Boeing does a lot more. Same thing with Lockheed Martin.
Mm-hmm.
Lockheed Martin is an aviation company.
Right.
But they do so much more than aviation.
They do.
All those companies, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, McKesson, Raytheon, those are like the big five,
the big one, right.
What we call it. Like those are your top government contractors, and they did contracts and everything.
This some shit right here. I hope this ain't. I hope people really paying attention, getting their notes. Like I said, sharing this with because this is something that anybody can do. If they willing to do it, spend the time to set up, get their structure right,
mm-hmm.
and get this going. I want you to touch on, because I know you just started your course. So I want you to touch on that a little bit, like what that covered, how would that help people and all that stuff.
Yeah. So I put my course together. Shout out to Chris Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to
Chris Bruce.
CV. He was like, I did this podcast. And he was like, man, you got to put a course out. You got to start talking, man. You got to get a game up. I was like, all right, cool. So I put a course together. And basically what my course did was take, once again, I tell people all the time, it is free information. So I took all that free information.
Put it together
so it makes sense. It's just like anything with the government. Mm-hmm. The information that they're going to provide you is going to be so crazy that it doesn't make sense to you. It scares you away. So what I did was create my course in a way that it breaks it down for you. And it makes it relatable. Just like me, like we were talking about earlier, like most people when they think of government contract, they think some dude in a suit and tie.
Yep.
Like, nah, this is me. I'm in a sweat. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I wear gas station t-shirts 5 days a week. Like, and that's what I do with my course. It's simple. It's me. Like, and that's what it is. It breaks it down to you step by step, very simply, how to get into the game, how to bid, how to do all those types of things. So that my goal is that it doesn't take you 2 years like it took me.
Mm.
I want you to be able to go through the course, go through my mentorship program or my Done For You program, and we really help you get to that point a lot faster than it took me.
Mm-hmm.
Because not everybody is going to be as patient as I was. And I wouldn't be as patient now as I was then. I just ain't had no choice then.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. I ain't have nothing but time. I ain't had no money. I have nothing. All I had was my time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, I wouldn't be as patient now. So that's what I try to do with all my programs, is make it so it's very easy for people to get into.
Mm. And for the people that's interested in the purchase, where can they get it?
You go on the website. It's www.thegovernmentcheese.org.
Mm.
And so on there, you can get that.
We're going to put that link in the description of this episode. And also, since me and D, we already been talking about getting into this since we both veterans, so we definitely going to keep the people updated.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to keep them updated, so we're going to make sure we plug this at all time, because this is going to be helpful for a lot of people that's moving forward. This is gonna go crazy. Watch. Yes, it's gonna be helpful for a lot of people. You wanna say something?
Yeah, I got one last question.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So final question, because you know, like we kind of hit on earlier, is it's a lot of talks of recession. Some people saying it's here. Some people saying it's coming soon. Can you just lead the listeners with your three biggest pieces of advice or lessons for how to navigate?
I was gonna ask them.
Man, the first one, this is gonna be a big one. And I want everybody to just think about this. I'm gonna say it. Figure out what your number is. The problem that I find with a lot of entrepreneurs that I deal with is they don't know their number.
And what do you mean
by
that?
People in general don't know their number. If you ask the average person, how much money do you really need? They couldn't tell you.
Mm.
And that was something that I had to learn through the recession. I had to learn what my number is. I had to learn how much money it truly took me to live on a monthly basis. So then that way I went to work every day with a sense of focus. So now I know exactly what I need to live, and I have my needs and I have my wants. So I know what's a necessity for me to live, and I know how much I need to make if I want to fulfill all my wants.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the main things I'll tell people is understand your number and what you actually need to live. Because as we go through recession, things are going to get harder. Things are going to tighten up. Money's going to slow up. You're not going to be able to do the things you was able to do before. And so if you don't know how much you actually need, you're going to get lost in the sauce real fast because you're just going to be moving. So that's the one thing I would say is figure out your number. Figure out what that zero is.
Like
in business, I know what my zero is. I know that on the first of the month, I have to have X, Y, Z. And if I don't have that number, then I've already lost and there's no coming back for it. So you got to figure out what your number is. That's the first thing. Second thing to play on to that, I would say live within your means based on that number. So don't get fooled by Instagram and all this. I'm here to tell you now that I'm involved in this whole Instagram and social scene, it's not what you think. Them folk really ain't got that money like
that's
that.
Facts.
Don't be fooled. That's not what it is. Live within your means and be happy with what your number is. And then the third thing is that what I just said, be happy. Understand what true happiness is. Because if you're not happy with yourself and what you are, there's no amount of money, there's no nothing that's going to make you happy. And one thing that I struggled with when I went through stuff in 2008 in the recession was it took me that year to get my mind right because I wasn't happy with myself. I put my values in a dollar, and I thought that the dollar made me happy. So I went out and I got all these things, the cars, the jewelry, the clothes, living this life because I thought that would make me happy. And then when it was taken away from me, I was miserable because my happiness was placed on that. And so going through this next year or two that we're going to go through, so you really got to figure out what your happiness is because that's the only thing that's going to get you through this. Because if you can't make no money and you put all your faith in a dollar and now you can't get a dollar, you're going to be bad. That's why if you look back to like 2007, 2008, 2009, man, you seen dudes on Wall Street was jumping off of buildings.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's real. Mm-hmm. Like they were literally opening up windows, jumping out of buildings. Because they just didn't know what to do because they were sitting there watching their computer and what they thought was so valuable to them was taken away from them in seconds. And they had no happiness. They had no life. They had kids. They had wives. They had families. They had it all. But they had nothing because their value was placed in the dollar. So those would be my three things. A, figure out what your number is. B, figure out how to live within that number. And then C, figure out what your true happiness is.
I love that answer. With that being said, do you think we are in a recession or do you think not yet?
No, 100%, almost. We're in a recession.
I agree.
We're already in it.
I think we've been there for a little minute now.
We've been there probably like a good 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
In my estimation, it won't get super bad for another 6 to 9 months. But it's going to be a long one.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it's going to be a long one because normally they last a little bit of time. But we have so many call it political issues in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have the left fighting against the right, and then we're going to have an election year here coming up pretty soon. We're starting mm-hmm. already have primary elections. So you're going to have people fighting with each other. So nobody's going to want to do anything because they're going to want to blame the other one for everything.
Exactly.
So then we the people are going to just be stuck in the middle. Yeah. So it's going to be bad. So people got to really get ready because we're already in it.
We're already in it. So it's... It ain't no get ready. It's here.
So you just got to buckle down and ride it out.
Start making moves.
Like I said, we was talking earlier. I said, I already see it. You know, when I'm going out, I'm in the clubs. People ain't making it rain no more. Yeah. You go to the clubs, people not. I'm for real. You go to the club last year, 2020, 2021. Any night you went out, it could have been a Tuesday, Saturday, Sunday. You go out, money flying everywhere. People ordering Classy Azul like crazy. Mm-hmm. Ace of Spades, mm-hmm. Casamigos flying everywhere. Now you go, I'm telling you, you go to the club, it's dry for real. Mm-hmm. Ain't no, people ain't throwing no more. So I'm just, as a watcher, you know, I'm observing everything. I see like, so people ain't got disposable income like that no more. And that's like, direct, like, you know, when you go out, like places like that, you getting direct feel for like the streets and the world and stuff like that. So when I was paying attention to that, I'm like, oh yeah, I see what's going on. That's so.
Yeah, it's crazy. But see, like for me living down in Miami, so we see it, we're always like 6 months ahead of the curve, right, mm-hmm. on everything. And so what we see now is we see a lot of the foreigners coming in as our dollar is really, really rough. And they're starting to take advantage of things because they know what's going on. So they're positioning themselves to get ready because they know that historically Americans aren't the most, you know, financially responsible people
<That's a fact. laughs>
in the world. Man. So in Miami, we see it, like the people coming from, you know, the Middle East, like, and they're, you know, bringing money over from those places, you know, it's just everywhere. They're coming from all over and they see the opportunity because they see what's happening. They're watching the gas prices get crazy. And they know that
gas is crazy.
You know, gas is crazy. So, like, if somebody got to go to work and down there, down our way, I mean, you know, you're talking almost $6 a gallon. Somebody trying to go to work and they're only making $15 an hour. By the time they go to work, that's it.
That's their money gone.
That's their money gone. So, what's going to happen? Like, they can't afford to live. Mm-hmm. And so, being in South Florida, like, people see that. So, they're coming, taking advantage of it. They're just sitting around waiting. And we see them come more and more and more. Like, and it's just from all over as well. People coming from, you know, up north, from New York, from Boston, all these big cities, and they're coming down there and they're just sitting there waiting because they know it's going to happen.
No, you're right.
And so,
right. I just seen a video in Las Vegas, the gas was like $8 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
What are you supposed, like, mm-hmm. how can you? Yeah, like what you do, like how you go anywhere, like,
you ain't going nowhere.
$8 a gallon,
it's crazy.
That's wild.
Like you can't even go to the grocery store to buy groceries. And then when you like, so if you fill your car up and you get there, then you got to figure out what you're gonna buy,
because
everything is so expensive.
And they used to say it's cheaper to eat at home. That ain't the case no more.
It's not.
You buy groceries, you could buy one meal, it'd be $100. Go to the grocery store. You go to Whole Foods, you spend $100 on some one that lasts you a day. You spend that going out.
Yeah. So it's the recession definitely here.
Yeah, I agree. But before we wrap up, I just want to say, man, this episode was jam packed with a lot of value. We're gonna have to do this again. I always want to say, me and Deanna, we both appreciate you taking the time to fly out here to get this done. Like,
no,
I'm super excited
y'all.
We was able to get this done, man. But before we let you go, do you mind plugging on your stuff? I know, pretty sure, hopefully by the time this out, your gram back up. So you mind just plugging all your stuff?
What a hater. When the hate don't work, they start telling lies.
All right.
So my personal Instagram is KevJ, KEV_J. And then for the, like I said, the website, www.thegovernmentcheese.org. And then the government cheese Instagram is GOV_cheese. And, so that's me.
Okay. And what's your info, D?
And you can find me on Instagram at Deanna Kent, Twitter, Deanna Kent. And yeah.
TikTok
Deanna Kent. I knew I was forgetting something.
Yeah, I got you. Y'all can find me on all platforms. That's at Xavier C. Miller. And you can follow the podcast Millionaire Mindsets on all platforms as well. And that's all we have for you guys on this episode of the Millionaire Mindsets podcast. See you guys next episode. Peace.
You gotta get your brain right if you're trying to make $1 million. If you ain't gonna do it for yourself, then do it for your mama. Only stay surrounded by them people if you know they solid. Elevate your hustle up today to double up your profit. Trying to learn some game, Xavier gonna talk about it. No, Deanna, speak that shit that everybody vouching. Ain't no more excuses valid. Get up off the couch and get up in your bag. To your bank account, need an accountant.
You can probably treat yourself to an ad-free upgrade or at least grab an extra latte after getting a Chime checking account with features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe, no minimum balance requirements, and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. That's chime.com/goals24. Chime feels like progress. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A., members FDIC. Spot me eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.